You're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. A very good morning if you're just after joining us. It's Greg Hughes here, and we're with you until 12 noon. Lots coming up in the programme, or on the programme, in fact. We'll have business news with Chris later on as well. So much more besides. Right, let's get to some of your comments coming in. We do appreciate all of them. Thank you very much indeed. Where are we? Hi, Greg. Bear with me on cost. At this stage, there needs to be a public inquiry into the whole DCB issue. This is now going on 12 years and is fast turning into the perfect storm, i.e. a humanitarian crisis. Serious questions need to be asked, which, with all respect, your station cannot ask. Well, Oisin, send me the questions and let me... I don't get what you're saying, and I want to get what you're saying, so get back in touch. By going ahead with the protest tomorrow, the public will go against the redress protesters. The cap will just keep going up if they keep protesting. There are houses being built for €499,000. This is ridiculous. House prices are just going up every time that the cap goes up. Rip off Ireland. Materials are coming in from the north as they're cheaper. It'd be worse if they got nothing out of a neighbour who said if he built for 90% a few years ago, he would save up to a third on the build. The redress protesters need to look at the bigger picture. You should insist that Charlie McConnell come on and speak to and explain to the people affected by defective blocks what exactly his and the government plan is to sort out this issue. You should invite him at every opportunity up until the election and let the people see who they are voting for. Hi, Greg. Sorry for a very naive question, but are the people affected by defective blocks still paying the mortgage on their homes? Many are. Many are paying mortgages, many are paying rent, and the reason being is that firstly, it would be a protest if absolutely everybody did it. But as soon as you are defaulting on one mortgage payment, you can't go to any lending organisation. You could even struggle to get a mobile phone contract. But this caller goes on to say, because if there is one thing I know, it's that the banks own the government. If all those affected stop their mortgage payment as a unit, surely that would kickstart the government because the banks would apply serious pressure. We already know we don't have enough prison space, so they can't jail them. But as I say, the ramifications for defaulting on debt are huge. Let me see. I just want to make sure that I'm staying on topic here. It sounds like the government will not use the $13 billion from the Apple case. It will be a corrupt job of secretly giving the money back to Apple. Well, that would be very difficult for them to do. Why is it taking so long for the County Council to open the portal so that you can submit your paperwork for the defective concrete block scheme? We'll chase that up. Can we trust this government to spend this $13 billion wisely? Look at the bike shed. Again, the bike shed's a big deal for some people, but as I said in social media yesterday, I think it's a distraction. I mean, it's a crazy spend, right? And so was the voting machines, which people bring up, and so was jailing the fella for selling garlic. But at the end of the day, there are people who are living in such terrible, terrible situations, and some of our attention, if more of our attention went on that, maybe we could come up with some sort of a resolution. I think sometimes some of these little things are almost like distractions. Like if all the media that's focused on that bike shed would give the defective concrete blocks issue the same coverage for a week, they actually have the power potentially to make change. And that's what frustrates me about those stories. On the Apple tax issue, these companies that were due the tax will come looking for their millions. I don't think this is over by a long shot. Why should we be holding their tax on an EU level? There is more to come, believes a listener. Hi, Greg. Regarding the Apple billions that Ireland is receiving, surely our local politicians and senators should be pushing for a bridge over the Swilly in Letterkenny from Bonaghy to Ballyrain now that we've this large surplus of money to spend. Thanks. Convoy Main Street, like a bottle, I'm told. There's an oil spillage the whole way up the town. I got an earlier notification of that. I'm not sure if that's been resolved, but if you're on Convoy Main Street, please be careful. Here's a question separate to anything else we've talked about so far. Is it normal for patients to have to pay €10 to get a list of your medication from the doctors for airport security? Now, is it usual? I think it depends on each GP practice, and for taking up their time, they're probably putting that charge on it. I don't know if it's usual. I would say it's not unusual. I didn't actually realise sometimes you had to get a list of medications for airport security, but there you go. I suppose it depends on the medication. On the topic of sleep apnea, I went abroad to get bariatric surgery and had to bring my sleep apnea machine. Those who have the condition and are going abroad for surgery should bring it as a precaution. Right, okay, good bit of advice for anyone who might be affected by that. You can get up to €500,000 now. How is this a failed scheme, says a listener. I suppose for some it's really replacing the house that they have. So in terms of, we have to take out quite a bit out of that €500,000 in terms of, you know, storage, accommodation and other stuff. And then you have to rebuild your house. You can't, I don't think, can you penalty-free downsize? I'm not sure. So you're going to have to replace the house as it was. And for some of the houses, that's going to be far in excess of the cap, it seems. How are the buses going to get in and out tomorrow evening, Greg? I don't know, to be honest. It's a tricky one because a lot of people are not happy about this protest. Great idea, inconvenience the people that are affected by defective concrete by blocking them from getting home. Another, don't believe it closes access to the town and they expect support. What about emergency services workers and going home students? If there are tailbacks tomorrow for the protest, where ambulances going to go come 5 p.m, the whole town will be blocked. It's senseless to do the protest tomorrow if emergency services can't get through. Everyone should go to Dublin. But it's Fianna Fáil selection convention tomorrow. Presumably that's why they believe this is the right move. Morning, Greg. Please tell the 100% redress party that that is protesting outside the hotel tomorrow. It'll achieve nothing except upset ordinary people trying to get where they're going, possibly the hospital. Why not do something that will yield results instead? But I mean, protest is always going to inconvenience, and that really is the way protest is. I mean, there's no doubt when we went down to Dublin, covering the protest down there, and when all of you went down to actually protest, there's always inconvenience to the people of Dublin in terms of traffic disruption and what have you. So I suppose the argument is if you can go down and do that in Dublin, why can't you do it in your own county? I don't know. I'm just supposing here.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Right, we're joined on the programme by Patty Shields, chairperson of Democrats Abroad. Good morning to you, Patty.
Good morning, Greg. How are you this morning?
Thank you very much. I'm doing very well. Donald Trump and Kamala Harris accused each other of lying in a televised debate centred around the economy, migration, guns and foreign policy. The two US presidential hopefuls met and shook hands. The Republican candidate has repeated claims denied by authorities of immigrants eating pets in Ohio, and that was disproved on the stage. The Democrat vice president defended abortion rights. So suppose, you know, in reality, Patty, and I know you're coming from this from a Democrat's perspective, but I think a lot of Americans, the majority of them, will not be swayed in their opinion. There's probably a 4 or 5% that might be. Do you believe either Mr. Trump or Ms. Harris did enough to, I suppose, make any advantage early this morning?
Yeah, Greg, and thanks for having me on. You know, I do think that this election is going to be decided by the voters, probably less than 50,000 voters in the 7, you know, well-documented battleground states. And I think last night was Kamala Harris's, you know, first pitch to kind of that wider electorate audience. The Democrats got to know her well during the DNC or before, but this was really the first stage for her to really speak about herself, her values, and her policies. So going into the debate, I think, you know, 30% of voters wanted to know more about her. Bit higher for her last night because I think Donald Trump is much more of an well-known entity, good, bad, or indifferent. So to your point, I don't think the people on the strong side of support for Harris or Trump would have been swayed by last night. But I do think she did speak and deliver a message to those voters that are going to be critical for her to win the election, and especially in the states that matter.
She did seem not fantastic on particularly early on. I don't know if she was finding her seat or feet, or if these topics aren't really her thing. But in terms of, you know, cost of living, the economy, important stuff to some people, she wasn't fantastic in that area.
Yeah, I think when we first started and the economy was kind of the first one out of the gate, I agree with you. I felt like she wasn't even answering the question that was asked. I thought her follow-up was certainly better. She kind of had this agenda. It seemed trying to deliver the talking points that she kept coming back to. But obviously the economy, you know, is of concern. The cost of living, you know, just like here in Ireland, you know, has just increased, and the pressure, you know, on people to afford everyday things is definitely felt over in the States. And I do think that's a kitchen table issue that is going to be continued to be prosecuted, you know, of the current administration. I do think some of the ideas she shared definitely, you know, are built upon the foundation that Biden had started with the recovery post-pandemic. But more has to be done to address the economic pressures. But I do think there are other things, you know, that she did discuss last night that are in the ballot that are equally as important. And I think we've seen in the midterm results and, you know, kind of the special elections post that, that, you know, women's rights and access to, you know, fertility and, contraception. Those are important,
but I think really voter issues. Yeah, and
well,
I think really in terms of motivating women or people with an interest in women to vote, but particularly women, you know, there's a strategy to that, because when you talk of things being so tight, where is the headspace? Where's the wiggle room? It does seem to be on that issue. So it doesn't surprise me that she focused so strongly on that. But what does surprise me is that the state of the state of politics in the United States at the moment, in that you have her saying that, whether you agree with her or disagree with her, but also someone who was a former president and seeking to be president, repeating the notion, which has been widely disproved, that babies are being killed, effectively executed after they're born.
Yeah.
The fact that that's the sort of two sides of a debate is very, I think it's very troubling for society.
I would agree with you. And like, I think it's, you know, it's something to say it at a rally, which he continues to repeat it at rallies, but he continues to, you know, put this type of rhetoric out there. And I think those of us that are, you know, more well-read and more well-learned, you know, certainly appreciate the fact that the moderator stepped in and she didn't have to really debate the points of truth and reality. But, you know, I did think it was a well thought out question last night when they discussed like the importance of truth. And, you know, I think as a society look at what's happening with AI, where the world is going, fake news, you know, denying election results, you know, you certainly want to see kind of a return to reality and truth out there. And
but the problem is, as you see,
it does seem to be lacking.
Yeah, but the problem is, as you see, then there is, you know, it depends on what truth you like, because there's an awful lot of mistruth coming out from everyone. Do you know what I mean? It would seem in certain cases, and that's why I would love just a major reset, not just in America, but right across the world, in that we actually only talk about stuff that is actually based on fact. And if we are going to call out the right, or wherever you want to call it, about misinformation and disinformation, well, then the arbiters of that are not the left or what have you, or the liberals,
correct,
and that they are equally held responsible for peddling lies, misinformation and disinformation. And I think until we get there, we're going to continue to have this division in politics.
Yeah, and it's been a very extreme polarization, and I agree with you. You're kind of, and you keep being served the truth you seek, you know, so whether it's your phone, whether it's where you get your news from, you know, there's a lot of disinformation out there. You know, it's unfortunate. A large part of the electorate, especially the electorate abroad, participate in American elections outside. Even presidential voter participation for citizens that are non-military is usually less than 15%. So, you know, as we look at how close these races are and how important each House race and Senate race is, as well as the presidential race, you know, the silent battleground swing state could be the votes abroad. And one of the big things we're focused on here in Ireland is there's between 25 and 35,000 voters eligible to send, you know, votes back to some key battleground states and in some. And we're really focused on registering as many voters as we can from abroad at votefromabroad.org. It takes about 10 minutes. And we're just encouraging all Americans living abroad to make voters heard. And they, you know, they vote for the candidate that represents, you know, their truth and where they see, you know, the country moving forward. You know, we need to hold our leaders accountable to the truth, you know, and the platform and the behavior that we want to see, you know, in this office. And it's important to America, but it's also important to the world.
All right, Patty, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. That's Patty Shields there, who is chair of Democrats Abroad. A caller says Trump done well considering he was up against three of them. So much for media impartiality. And that's the fact that he was fact checked. And Kamala Harris didn't seem to be fact checked as much. But I mean, on some of the stuff that Trump was fact checked on, the claims that are that have not been proven, there's no actual evidence of it, and even by his own testament he said he saw it on telly. You know, when you say that, you know, there's people in Springfield that are rounding up people's cats and dogs and eating them, when there's no proof of that and it's denied by the state itself, you are going to get fact-checked on that. Whereas maybe Camilla, a lot of her language, some would see it as being airy-fairy, unite, and we need to work together and we need to plan for the future. And I mean, you know, that's how do you fact-check that, right? But anyway, listen, if you've got any views, maybe you thought you've caught up on it, maybe you watched it live, maybe you view you feel Donald Trump has effectively bagged the election, or maybe you think Kamala Harris has. It's completely up to you. 086 60 25,000, let us know. 086 60 25,000, or call 07491 25,000. Dara O'Brien never came on Highland, at least Charlie McConnell used to. I have spoken to Dara O'Brien, yes indeed. I don't know whether it was last year or the year before, but I have spoken to him. He did come on just as the I can't remember when he did come on, but he didn't come on after the scheme was announced. But he did come on previous to that. Remember when thousands of Donegal people united and went to Dublin and protested? Remember that this awful humanitarian crisis has not changed, but the government's strategy on dividing us by a piecemeal appeasement by unsatisfactory reform has made a difference. Donegal people, please be united in the protest against the lack of government empathy headed by the likes of Charlie McConnell Logue, who's not, who won't come on the radio against, well, I won't read that last bit, but it's a, I appreciate your comment. Thank you for that, and noted. Call a general election ASAP. Don't wait until the 15th of November in the depth of winter. Look at all the sitting TDs bowing out one by one. One would wonder why this issue, this defective concrete block issue, has to be sorted once and for all. People we are talking about, we live in a first world country. Appreciate your... listen, no election's going to happen before the budget, because it's going to be a budget that... There's an awful lot of people, and the truth is, you know, the budget will be good for an awful lot of people that are inclined to vote. And it might not be quite as good, but we'll have to wait and see. It might be not quite as good for those less inclined to vote. And that's, it's not a controversial point of view. And we're back. Good morning to you. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. We are inviting you, encouraging you to get involved in the public vote for Irish Music Month. We had a fantastic day last Friday with our four finalists. One of them will go on to represent Highland Radio in a national competition, joining 21 other acts sent forward by Independent Radio, which will be whittled down to six for a special night where one will be crowned the Irish local hero. These are our finalists. They are fantastic. Zoe McCauley with her track Wait and See.
Won't think about every place I've been, 'cause I'm just a girl with a dream.
And Zoe is a 16-year-old singer-songwriter from Dunloan. Super talented, super popular. The close harmonies there of Jude McCandless and Callum Feeney. Collectively, they're known as Tessio. They are a singer-songwriting duo from Derry, and this is their Hang It On My Back track. We have Owen Ferry with his track Miss You. Owen, 18 years of age, a singer-songwriter from Gwydor. His influences include Moya Brennan, Mairéad Ní Mhúine and Enya. And the Afades. Cahar, Grace M, Grace N and Kyle. And that's their sound. And that's their track, Giving Out. So if you want to give one of those four acts your vote, go onto our website, highlandradio.com. Click into Irish Music Month and select. We've had thousands upon thousands of votes, by the way. Your vote matters. It's tight. So if you have a favourite there, Zoe, Tessio, The Afades, Owen, Ferry, vote for them right now. And your votes will be married to those of a judging panel. And our winner will be announced live on Friday. And any of them, clearly any of them could win. And any of them will head off and do us very, very proud. There's just absolutely no doubt about that. All right, I'm joined on the programme now by Rosie McDonough, co-founder of Hygiene Hub. Hi, Rosie.
Hi, how are you?
Great to have you on the programme today. Right, okay. Talk to me a little bit about Hygiene Hub before we get on to the main subject matter.
So Hygiene Hub is a national charity. We're based in 8 or 9 different counties. We are powered by volunteers and we collect and redistribute hygiene items, distribute them out to charities working with people who can't necessarily afford the hygiene items themselves. They might be in poverty, they might have mental health issues, they might be in a women's refuge.
And we are in a space whereby we are seeing a really significant increase in a lot of stuff, but not least hygiene items, but also in a position where people, many, many people whose money runs out maybe 2 or 3 days before they get to access money the next time, have to make decisions on where to spend their funds. And often it's in terms of sort of hygiene projects, hygiene products that are cut from the list first.
Yeah, we see that all the time. That we did a bit of research and what was found out that kind of over 40% of the Irish population are cutting back on hygiene items when they don't have the budget for it. And sure, you know, we know ourselves when we go into the shops and we see the price of some of the hygiene items. When you have to make a decision about whether you're putting food on the table or buying that shampoo, we all know where we would go, you know.
Yeah, indeed. And talk to us a little bit about the increases, because they are really quite significant, aren't they?
Yeah, no, there is huge increases, particularly in the price of hygiene items. And it's everything from, you know, toothbrush and toothpaste, which is so important for your dental health and your dental care, but also everything from like toilet roll, bleach, Dettol, you know, washing powder. You know, this has a really, when that goes up, that has a really big impact on the families who can't afford them. You know, they cut them out, and then we see that, you know, maybe people aren't able to change a baby's nappy as often as they want to, or kids aren't able to clean their gym kit as quickly as they need to. And that can have a whole load of issues down the line.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, interviews like this, I think, are very important in raising awareness, because there are perhaps people who aren't affected by this that don't realise that there are others that live in hygiene poverty. So I think it's a useful exercise for that in and of itself. But also in terms of and it's part of National Hygiene Week, how can people get involved in supporting fellow community members in this regard?
Yeah, so National Hygiene Week is running this week. It's our big awareness raising week. You know, not many people know about hygiene poverty, as you said. Throughout this week, we're really trying to sort of raise the conversation about hygiene poverty, put it on the agenda, and I suppose grow the work that we're doing. You know, we've seen a huge increase in demand for hygiene items all over the place. Donegal in particular got a brilliant group who are based, you know, sort of in Letterkenny, Ballyshannon kind of areas. Seeing a huge increase in that demand, we need to be able to respond to that. So if people want to, you know, get involved, please do. We have loads of spaces for volunteers to join and help out redistributing those hygiene items to the charities that need them.
Hygienehub.ie is probably the best place to go, where people can find out more information or get links to donate online or what have you. But in terms of distributing the donations, be it, you know, items that are dropped off or money that's donated via the iDonate page, how do you reach those that need the support?
Yeah, so, you know, we'd work with a huge range of different charities and community organisations. They know the communities best. They know what people need best. So we provide those items. It might be local groups working with people in direct provision centres, or it could be, you know, early years TOTS kind of childcare settings.
So you really use the infrastructure that's on the ground, do you? And you give it to those organisations who know the needs that need to be met?
Absolutely. You know, as a volunteer, I may not know exactly what someone else needs, but we work with charities who know that really well, and who are already in place doing brilliant work. We like to help them do their jobs even better by giving them hygiene items to reach out to new people, to provide better support, and then to bring those people in and you know, give them additional support they need as well.
Yeah, Donegal's one of the areas where a service has been established, the Donegal Project, in late 2020. And people have been really quite generous. 4,351 kilograms have been donated. You know, compare that to Cork, and I'm not saying there's a hierarchy of giving, right? Well, maybe there is, I don't know. But it's a big county, and we're almost double that. So obviously the people of Donegal have been very generous. Do you have the drop-off points to hand there? Or do you want to direct people through the website? Because I know you have 4 drop-off points and you work with 6 community partners in getting these products out to those that need them most.
No, absolutely. And like I said, we're a voluntary organisation. So the more volunteers we have, the more products that we can provide. There are drop-off points all over the place. They're on our website. So you can find the one that's nearest you, you know, what makes most sense for you. But when we get new volunteers on, we like to set up new drop-off points as well. We're always looking to grow those. That's where the general public can donate items that they'd like to, you know, pass on. And the more of those we have, the more products we get, and then the better we can provide our support as well.
And do you get involved yourself in, and not you necessarily personally, but just as a collective, Rosie, in terms of, you know, is there anything we should be doing as a state to make improve access to these type of things? You know, I mean, we'll all know, you know, one shampoo marketed towards a certain age group of women can be, you know, 4 times that for a fella, but it's the same contents, or razor blades, you know, stick them in a pink pack and charge 3 times the price as you would if you stick them in a blue pack, right? Do we have any control over that? Should we have any control over that to make sure it's fairer and more accessible for all?
No, I think you raise a really good point in terms of the price disparity. I suppose at the end of the day, Hygiene Hub wants to get us to a place that we don't need to exist. You know, we don't want to have to be providing these hygiene items because people can't afford them. We're doing it because the need is there, and the need is certainly growing. But a big part of what we do, and a big part of National Hygiene Week, is kind of putting our work on the agenda to try and make that longer term policy change. You know, if the state can step in and make sure that people are well protected and well looked after, it prevents people from falling into poverty in the first place, rather than, you know, in the position that we're in now, where people aren't just aren't able to afford them. And we're having to step up ourselves, and other organisations having to step up to provide those supports instead.
Thanks, Rosie. Lovely talking to you.
Thanks so much.
OK, bye-bye. Take care of yourself. That is Rosie McDonough there. If you want more information on that, go to their website, hygienehub.ie. And lots of people in Donegal, and you're so fantastic out there, you know, with no thanks, raising a fortune through charity drives and what have you, and also in terms of donating. And you know, there's another cohort, and again, we were over in London, and yesterday was such a, and every day is an important day, but yesterday just we kicked off with the defective concrete blocks, and I'm not sure I got to reference what goes on in London, but you know, there are some amazing people over there that raise so much money. And we talked to some of them on Sunday on the programme. But just regular folk who are from Donegal or wherever they're from that are involved in organising golfing charity days or tractor drives or whatever it might be. And they're sending thousands upon thousands of euro back to fantastic charities. I was chatting to one gentleman who I won't name for fear of embarrassing him, but he's sent back $2,000 to the Irish Wheelchair Association every year for 10 years through an event he's involved with. And there's so many other people like him, Donegal people over there, which I was most interested in, sending so much money back here. It's fantastic, really, what they do. And for no thanks, and even those that support some of the initiatives we have here, like Home for Christmas and others, who are so generous in what they do, they don't want any credit. They don't even want to be known. They have just done well for themselves, and they want to bring some joy or help back home. And it really is an amazing thing about, and I don't like the word diaspora, I wish there was a different word for it, but our Donegal folk living abroad, be it all across Britain, be it across America or the UAE now with the massive population of people that we have living over there as well. And they never forget where they come from, and they always, if they can, try and send money home and help. And that's been happening for generations, hasn't it? Just to be a little bit careful that Donegal County Council, they're currently working to clear an oil spill between Stranraer and Raphoe, and there's reports of an oil spill in convoy as well. Signage has been erected. They're probably well ahead of dealing with that right now. But in any case, just if you're driving that road, please be careful. I've never almost come a cropper with an oil spill. I don't know what it's like, but I imagine it is terrifying. Okay, let us take a very short break, and I'll be joined by our next guest in just a moment. Maybe some of you have been lucky enough to not have to use your central heating for a while. You might have to use it tonight. Okay, Councillor Martin McDermott is chair of the Enhanced DCB Scheme Committee. He's with us on the show now. Good morning, Martin.
Morning, Greg.
Now, we're going to talk about the very important issue as well of the call for a development of a primary care centre. But this week, we've been platforming an awful lot of views, an awful lot of people concerned about changes to the redress cap and the fact that, you know, some people who were told to, you know, get on this scheme, it's a good scheme, we want to see people apply, but now are getting information that maybe they won't be able to benefit from this increase. So firstly, I suppose any increase is good. 10% is not insignificant. We'll start there. But do you want to talk more generally then about what you hope it will be?
Yeah, look, I mean, the 10% increase is something that we've been pushing for since last July, that this July that the 10% increase would come in, that would allow the cap to raise from 420,000 to 462,000. It is vitally important, Greg, that that cap does cover people that have started works to their house, either remediation or demolition and rebuild. You know, if we go back to 2022, November of 2022, when this new enhanced scheme was brought in by Minister O'Brien. At that point, the 420,000 was the cap. Since that, there has been quite a considerable increase in building costs from that to now. That was the reason why we pushed that we needed the 10%. A minimum of 10% is the maximum that can be done under the legislation that's there at the minute. Inflation probably has rose quite considerably more than that, probably somewhere in the region of 18 or 19%. So that 10% at least gives a bit of a cushion to people that have already started or that have larger houses, particularly over 2,300 square feet.
Yeah, and of course then too, there was changes to the SEI grant that smoothed that out a little bit, that might also go some way to bridging some gaps.
Correct. Yeah, and the SEI grant rose last year, and then back in November, December of 2023, the SCSA done the review off the rates, and in March they give an increase of roughly around between 5% and 6%. That increase hasn't materialised yet to come to homeowners. It probably has rose by another couple of percent, at least at this stage, maybe somewhere about 8%. So that increase again is important to people that are in the process of rebuilding their houses. So, you know, we really need to make sure that people that have started, particularly in the last year, get that increase in cost, both not just the increase in cost for the cap, but also the increase of square foot, square metre rate that has to coincide with that, the 8%, because there'll be a lot of people that, you know, even the cap went up to, didn't matter what it went to, whatever the figure would be, they still would need the square foot, square meter rate to rise as well to give them the increase in costs, because they might be below the caps. And there's quite a number of houses that don't get as far as the 420 because they have a smaller size house.
Right, so you, I mean, we're all in agreement. We all hope and wish that that's the case. So in terms of the likelihood or the reality, where are we at?
Well, I suppose maybe to give away a bit of context to the problem here, in the legislation, as it's wrote, the legislation does need to be changed to allow the retrospective part of that to happen, because the way the legislation is wrote at the minute, it's on when you get your re-evaluation or your amount granted to you, it's at that point. And that's when the new scheme came in back last year. That bit of legislation was brought in to allow people that was on the 90-10 scheme to be re-evaluated and get the new grant amount for the new enhanced scheme. But I suppose that bit of wording that's in the legislation is causing a bit of problem in relation to the retrospective payments of that grant amount. So, you know, look, it's something that can be resolved, and I would hope that the Minister will take that on board and that he will, you know, fix that bit of legislation, which can be done quite easily through the Dáil. There's lots of legislation going through the Dáil on a regular basis, and the wording could be changed pretty quickly. And if that was done, that would allow the retrospective payments to happen without any problem. So, you know, I think this is certainly doable, and I think it's important that it does happen. People need this money. People are out this money, particularly people with larger houses. So I think it needs to happen, but you know, we have to keep the pressure on and make sure I will have a conversation with Minister McConnell about this as well.
Yeah, of course. And we heard from Minister McConnell on the news, right? And he says he's confident that it will apply to all homeowners. Can he not, or can we not get that confirmation from Dara O'Brien so that we can alleviate this potentially unnecessary anxiety that we're platforming this week? Because I think we'd all prefer, and I certainly would prefer, not to have to talk about it, because people wouldn't be so fearful. So why can't we get some sort of clarity from Minister O'Brien in relation to this, I wonder?
I would hope that will happen. But again, Greg, I don't have the magic wand to make that happen.
No, I'm not blaming you. I'm just asking you.
You know, I wish he would. I wish he would clarify that. And I wish he would clarify it quickly to allow, because people are going through enough at the minute. It's not easy moving out of your house. It's not easy getting your house ready for moving out. I'm in that process myself, and people are anxious, people are nervous, and people need, and people have moved on, Greg, and you rightly say that we've all been saying to people, you know, we need to get started, we need to get houses fixed. But people have moved on thinking, look, if we do move on, we're out X amount of money. By the time we get to the end of a rebuild, the 10% cap will have increased, and at least we'll be able to get that gap of money back again at that stage. So it'll be very, very important that happens, because people have and made that move dependent on that to happen.
And how retrospective is retrospective? So say, for instance, I applied for this, and I had a huge shortfall, but the house has been tossed and rebuilt, but I'm sitting sort of with €130,000 mortgage, and I would qualify for this 10% if I were to start now. Are you saying that it would be that retrospective, that family would also get the 10%? Is that what retrospective means, or is it only those that are in the process of have commenced?
Well, I think retrospective means going back to, like, we're not talking about very big numbers here. You know, at the minute we have somewhere in the region of about 240 people that have started to remediate their homes. Mm-hmm. And if you look at that 240, Greg, and break it down, you know, quite a number of those will be remediations.
Yeah, I get
and
you.
They won't have reached the cap.
But just on that, Martin, because we're short on time, and I'm sorry about this, the government can't do that, can they? Because that means, effectively, if we see this could be go on for 10, 20 years, possibly will. Yeah. If we continue to see an increase, right, in rebuild costs, that means all houses, even if they were tossed and rebuilt in 2020, would cost the same as tossing and rebuilding that house potentially in 2035. The government aren't going to okay that.
No, I wouldn't expect them to okay that. But I think what has to happen here, Greg, is that, you know, people that have finished and have, you know, finished out their builds, and then the people that come that are in the middle of their builds now, that 10% increase is going to can happen in three times throughout the lifetime of the enhanced scheme, so three times within 15 years. The increase in rate per square foot, there needs to be a definite time put on that. Mm-hmm. That needs to be tied down now, whether it's March or April, so that people know that if you start after that date, yes, there's going to have to be a cut-off point. Can't not be a cut-off point. There'll have to be a cut-off point in relation to that date. But I think that's the kind of thing that needs to be nailed down now and tied down and put a date on that, so that people know when they start their build that if we start after a certain date, that's the amount of money you're going to be get. Mm. After that date, next year, say it's April, that rate will change at that point. So those things need to be nailed down. And I think that's the confusion here, and I think that needs to be all made clear. But I do think that with the fact that we have ran 2 years now nearly on a cap that's probably too low for quite a number of houses, I think that cap certainly should be allowed for people up to this point. Going into the future, it could be a number of years before the cap changes again. It'll be dependent on when or whoever is minister to make that call over the lifetime of the enhanced scheme, which is 15 years.
All right. And briefly, what do you think about this protest? I presume you'll be travelling to the Clannery tomorrow. The people organising it want to make that as difficult as is possible. What's your view on this protest tomorrow evening?
People are entitled to protest, Greg, and people are anxious and nervous and worried at the minute. So, you know, look, people are entitled to do that. I think the main point would be to make sure that, you know, that ambulances and emergency services are able to get into Letterkenny Hospital. I think that's the most important part of that road, because that's a very bottlenecked at the best of times, that particular stretch of road. So I think it would be important that is taken care of.
It's very important, the primary care centre, the comments in relation to that. Do you mind just with the time, Martin, if we invite you back on maybe later in the week or early next week, just to ram that point home? Is that okay?
Yeah,
okay. Happy enough with that? I appreciate that, Martin. Thank you very much indeed. Councillor Martin McDermott there. 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number.